support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Mike Rosenberg from Columbia Credit Union. Mike says they trust what they see and hear on OPB, and that aligns with Columbia Credit Union's brand.
It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, July 12th. Oregon's Department of Transportation is broke. Officials at the state agency are promising Oregonians a future of worse winter driving conditions, more potholes, and slower DMV customer service. What does this have to do with politics? Well, the only way to fix it, apparently, is by asking state lawmakers for billions of dollars. We're going to dig into state transportation issues, and we're going to ask what it would take to make Portland great for bikes again. I'm OPB Politics reporter Lauren Dake.
I'm OPB Politics reporter Dirk Vanderhart.
I'm OPB Politics reporter Bryce Dole.
Dirk, let's step back and set the scene. Every so often, the state passes a big so-called transportation package. Lawmakers often start this process by touring the state to try and better understand what different regions of the state need. They come back to Salem. They attempt to pass a large funding package that raises taxes for roads, and they often promise splashy new projects to get people excited. This process is now underway for the upcoming 2025 legislative session.
Yes, it is transportation package time in Salem, and woe to us all. This is something that we are going to be covering a lot, I expect, for the next year or so. And so folks who follow the Capitol and political news can expect to hear a lot about the state's roads. As you said, Lauren, this is something the legislature does at somewhat regular intervals. They dive into the big pressing needs in roads and bridges and highways and sidewalks, all sorts of things around the state. And they work hard to find agreement on a set of tax hikes, maybe fee increases, whatever other mechanism they can come up with to fund not only the Oregon Department of Transportation, but also transportation projects for cities and counties around the state who all get a piece of the money in the state's highway fund. Oregon lawmakers last did this in 2017 when they passed a pretty enormous $5.3 billion transportation package. Before that, they passed a bill in 2009 in the teeth of the Great Recession. And so here we are again. As you said, Lauren, lawmakers have begun touring the state to get a sense of how people want the future of Oregon transportation to look like. They've so far gone to Portland and Tillamook. They got a lot more stops planned this summer.
So the process is underway, but there are some big differences already from previous years, and not just the price tag, which we will get into. But this year, lawmakers are not promising any new fancy projects to make raising taxes feel more palatable.
That's right. And I think we should caveat this by just saying we don't know what this bill is ultimately going to look like. Sometimes lawmakers say we don't want projects, and then they decide they need projects if they're going to vote for something. But right now there is a current intention, or at least there appears to be, to figure out a way for ODOT to be able to just cover its bases. You know, this is an agency that has been really vocal in recent years that the state's system for bankrolling roads is insufficient, and that has only got more urgent lately. ODOT has made budget cuts in some areas. It told lawmakers last winter that it needed an emergency infusion of $19 million just to be able to adequately plow roads and do other necessary maintenance. And so ODOT is warning things are only going to get worse without some sort of fundamental change in how Oregon raises money for its roads. So the focus right now by the agency and really a lot of lawmakers is figuring out how to get money for some pretty basic services rather than trying to fund those major highway projects you're talking about. Here's how ODOT Director Chris Strickler put it to lawmakers in a committee hearing earlier this year.
I'll admit it's a little awkward to be in front of you not be asking for a bunch of projects, right? An agency director of a transportation agency always goes to the legislature and says we need a bunch of projects. There are some project needs, certainly. They're not on the list for tonight because we're really focusing on these operational needs.
But, you know, ODOT not pushing new projects is not the same as ODOT not having projects it needs to pay for. And let me explain that. The state has two pretty massive highway projects that are still sitting unfinished and unbegun in one instance from that last transportation package in 2017. The big one is this project on I-5 through Portland's Rose Quarter that hasn't even begun and will cost nearly $2 billion. And the agency has no idea right now how it's going to pay for that or another big project, which is just another issue lawmakers face. There is a lot of money needs right now.
At the same time, you have reported on pretty positive state revenue forecasts where state economists have told lawmakers that the projections for personal income revenue are higher than expected. So explain why ODOT, the Department of Transportation, is so low on cash.
Yeah, it's this difference between those revenue forecasts you're talking about, which, as you said, rely heavily on personal and corporate income taxes, and the way that Oregon funds transportation. The money that makes up the state's big pool of transportation money, which is the state highway fund, comes from three places. It comes from fuel taxes, like the 40 cents a gallon gas tax drivers pay at the pump. It comes from weight mile taxes that are paid by big trucks hauling freight. And it comes from fees paid to the DMV for things like vehicle registrations, license plates, all those big costs we're used to every now and again. But ODOT says there are a couple of problems with that system. The first is that they're not raising enough money to keep up with very, very high inflation that has made road construction projects cost a lot more than they did even a few years ago. And the second is that the state's gas tax is just much more inefficient than it used to be. People are buying electric vehicles and cars with really high fuel efficiency, which means they are using less gas. And according to ODOT, that means that gas tax revenues are going to begin falling. Actually, they are still going up. They will crest this year, but they will begin falling in the future. And the agency says, you know, a lot of its money is already spoken for by priorities that before it can get to the basics, it just needs a big rethink in how we fund transportation and how we prioritize transportation.
So tell us what this means in practical terms. Will we really not see ODOT snowplows up on Highway 26 and government camp in the future?
Yeah, you know, I don't know the agency has said anything with that much specificity, but it is certainly painting a dire picture of the future if lawmakers don't act. And that includes, and I'm quoting here, longer road closures, more trash and graffiti, worse winter driving conditions, more potholes, and slower DMV customer service. You know, the agency actually says it's going to have to stop paving any road that's not a U.S. interstate by 2027 if lawmakers don't pony up more money. And as you said, Lauren, it is a lot of money. ODOT told the legislature in February it's going to need an extra $1.8 billion a year to get up to full funding. And that's not even counting the billions of dollars I mentioned it's short on for some big outstanding highway projects. So, you know, the need is very, very large.
Yeah. So all lawmakers have to do to make this happen is raise taxes. Can they do that, Dirk?
You know, obviously I can't answer that question. I don't think anyone, even lawmakers, can answer that question at this point. But I'll say that it feels pretty unlikely to me right now, based on the conversations I've had, that the legislature is going to arrive at something as massive as the ask that ODOT is making, that $1.8 billion a year plus all the billions it needs for its highway projects. State Senator Brian Boquist, who's a Dallas Republican and sits on the Transportation Committee, told me no lawmaker could survive a vote for that kind of tax hike, meaning, you know, they would be jeopardizing their reelection chances by doing something like that. Senator Chris Gorsuch, who's a Democrat and co-chairs the Transportation Committee, told me lawmakers are going to go for as much as is palatable to the public, but that is a public that has already been feeling the effects of inflation, as we all know, so we'll see how much that is. But, you know, how much money the legislature ultimately goes for is just one big question here. The other is how they get there. Because, as I mentioned, ODOT is arguing, and I think many people agree, that there needs to be just a big shift in how the state finds money for roads. That, I think, could mean moving away from the gas tax and toward a system that charges people for how much they drive in a year. That's something that a lot of people talk about these days. It could mean instituting something like a delivery fee on companies like Amazon, which is an approach other states have taken. It could just be a whole bunch of things. But the point is that the fact lawmakers have to not only find money, but also might have to create an entire new funding mechanism only adds a degree of difficulty to this already tricky task. And let's note, transportation packages have failed in the past. I mean, last time they passed one, Governor Kate Brown wanted to get a transportation funding bill through in 2015. That blew up because of partisan politics and some intra-party fighting. So lawmakers had to punt it for 2 years. We ended up with one in 2017. This is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a guaranteed thing.
Okay, last question for you, Dark. I feel like we can't really talk about transportation anymore without also talking about our warming climate. There has been a real push lately to consider how our habits are driving climate change. In other parts of the country, there's been a push to just, you know, stop widening highways, for example. What are Oregon leaders saying about this?
Yeah, you know, this will come up, and I think how people are looking at it obviously depends on who you talk to. But on one level, I think the folks who are most concerned about climate impacts and the impacts of the state's transportation system seem to agree with the thrust of this conversation right now. You know, they seem to support ODOT paving to preserve roads and bridges. They especially support boosting funding to public transit or programs that make streets safer for bikes or pedestrians. What many don't support are the major highway projects like some of those funded in the last transportation bill. And that is creating tension this time around because, as I mentioned, there are major outstanding projects, in particular that one that would widen Interstate 5 through Portland. And that has really been the subject of major debate as the legislature hears from citizens this summer. Plenty of advocacy groups are insisting that ODOT needs to scale back its plans to widen the freeway. They don't want to attract more cars to I-5. They don't want those cars spewing higher emissions. But business and industry groups have been pushing that project for 7 years. They say it's been promised to them at this point. They expect it to happen. And I think a lot of lawmakers agree that that is an unfulfilled promise that they want to follow up through on. So, you know, the climate impacts of whatever transportation bill we take up is certainly going to be a big factor of discussion as we move forward.
All right, let's pivot to Bryce, because the state is not the only one grappling with big transportation issues. You guys remember back in the day before Portland became known for protests and public drug consumption and a housing crisis? We were just sort of weird and in largely good ways and super bike friendly. But lately, it seems like there has just not been as much attention paid to the city's transportation projects. But they are underway. Bryce, you dug into a pretty bold transportation plan passed by the Portland City Council in 2018. Remind us the details of that plan.
This plan is called Central City in Motion. It was a 10-year plan, and the city is more than halfway into it. Basically, city officials had recognized that jobs and population were growing in the city's urban core, and they needed the infrastructure to accommodate that growth without making traffic any worse. The city wanted to improve bike lanes, bus lanes, pedestrian crossings, you name it, all to make it safer and easier to get around in areas throughout the central city, like downtown or the Lloyd District. City officials talked about this plan with a lot of fanfare, and they estimated that it would cost about $72 million. But at the time, the city hadn't identified exactly where the money would come from. They had some ideas. One example was Metro's $7 billion region-wide transportation package, which voters didn't pass in 2020. So that didn't work out. Since the plan was adopted, the city has been slowly chipping away at it over the past 6 years.
How much of this grand vision from 2018 has become reality?
This was the main focus of our reporting. Ultimately, the city has dozens of projects in this plan. It's completed about a third of them, and the pandemic clearly had a major impact on the project's progress. It's hard to overstate it. But city officials say they've still managed to make major improvements. Some of them have drawn a lot of attention and praise, like the Better NATO Parkway along the city's waterfront park. That's a two-way bikeway and sidewalk, and a lot of bikers just love it, though it took about 7 years to complete it. But about half of the projects in this plan haven't even started because the city is still trying to find where the money's going to come from for them. Meanwhile, the cost of the entire project has more than doubled, partly due to inflation. Construction costs have ballooned 80%, and the whole project is now estimated to cost more than $147 million.
Oof. Is the city still this great bike and transit city that it once was considered? I mean, have we just forgotten how great it is on that front, or is it really just not so good anymore?
Look, a lot of people who I interviewed still say that this is a great town to get around, especially on bikes. We have a big summer event where people just get together all throughout the city and just bike around called Pedalpalooza. But like a lot of cities around the country, Portland has really struggled to get back on the move, especially since the pandemic. Bike and public transit ridership is still stubbornly low in the central city, though there are signs that it's increasing slightly. I interviewed public transit advocates and local commuters, and some of them really question whether the city is putting its transportation goals on the back burner while it's dealing with a lot of the issues that you were talking about, like houselessness and addiction. Some people say they just can't afford to take the bus and they need to carpool, or they feel unsafe in largely empty buses. Others don't feel safe biking in certain areas. I talked to one mother who would bike her kids to school near downtown, and she became so concerned with her safety, cars nearly running into her, that she's taking her kids to another school on the other side of the river. This fall, it's closer to her home. And last year, it's also important to note that across the city overall, fatal car crashes actually reached the highest total in at least 30 years. So clearly, the city is still facing a lot of glaring issues.
Your reporting really reminded us where we are at this halfway point of this very ambitious project. What will it take for the city to actually see some progress on these ambitious ideas?
Money, and a lot of it. At this point, the city doesn't have funding for projects that are expected to cost $62 million. And it's currently tackling some of its most expensive projects, from protecting bike lanes to shortening crossings and repaving roads. Meanwhile, the city's Transportation Bureau was facing a big funding gap this year, but money from Portland's clean energy tax helped fill that. The director of Portland's Transportation Bureau disagrees with the idea that improving transportation in the central city hasn't been a priority. But even she told me that the city isn't where it would like to be. She said it's not because of a lack of desire or trying. She just said that the Bureau just needs a lot of money to finish what's left of this massive plan.
All right, let's leave it there today. Bryce and Dirk, thank you for joining me. This week's episode was produced by Andrew Thien. Our audio engineer is Stephen Cray, and our music comes from Audio Network. We will be back next week with more political news from across the Pacific Northwest. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting at opb.org. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.
I'm Alex Olinsky, city government reporter at OPB. We know you love hearing about the latest political battles on this podcast. OPB's Salmon Wars podcast will give you insights into some of the history behind what's happening now. It tells the story of one Yakima Nation family who has been fighting for salmon in the Columbia River across generations. Find Salmon Wars wherever you listen to podcasts.